Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source, a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences, and related topics including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers, and you're welcome to call in to ask questions or make comments during the show. Telephone area code 877-876-5227. Again, that is 877-876-5227. And we also would like to encourage you to support this program by making a donation or sponsoring a show. And for more information, please go to my website, which is towardthelight.org. That's towardthelight.org. This week, we've got a tremendous guest joining us, one who's written a really tremendous book that I'm very much looking forward to reading in completion myself. It is called God at the Speed of Light, and this man is also a physician. His name is Dr. T. Lee Bauman. Welcome to our show, Lee. How are you this evening?
Hello, Juliet. I am doing quite well, and thank you for allowing me to be on your show.
Oh, it's really a pleasure, and I've heard about this book actually before, and I was very excited just by the title of it. As one who throughout my life has been obsessed with light, this really struck a chord in me because I feel like there's a reason I've always been obsessed with light. So there's a lot of powerful information that you've got to share in your book about the light. But first, before we get into talking about your book, feel free to tell us a little bit about your background and training. You are a physician. Tell us a little bit about that, Lee.
Well, I am. I'm a medical doctor. My training is in internal medicine and geriatrics, which really is what led me into interest in near-death experiences and such because, you know, unfortunately, I found myself trying to resuscitate patients from time to time, and you always wondered, you know, what was exactly going on during those times. Certainly, as you well know, with your own near-death experiences, it was just such a, you know, not to pun a phrase, but yeah, a light bulb going on when Raymond Moody wrote his landmark book, Life After Life. So between his writings and another favorite of mine, Albert Einstein, I just felt that those two individuals really changed my life from my own scientific training, which at the time led a lot of us away from spirituality. I actually found many years later that science actually now supported my spirituality, and then that was really what my books were about.
So in a sort of way, you've come full circle with the research and also the experiences. Now, a question I've got is, were you asking these questions when you were working on the patients before or after your encounter with Raymond Moody's material, for example?
Well, I think it was just a never-ending process from the first time that when I was a resident in the emergency room and found yourself looking on while physicians and colleagues were resuscitating patients. You wondered what was going on, and obviously there was just no information out there at all at the time. Certainly in the early 1970s, there was no information. Those that probably much like yourself, who had near-death experiences, found that they didn't want to talk about it because most people thought they were either crazy or, you know, gave other excuses for why they were having hallucinations or, you know, other justifications for how they experienced what they did. So Raymond Moody answered so many of those questions through his interviews in Life After Life. It was just a wonderful insight that he brought to physicians and certainly to the victims as well.
And I think that that is such a tremendous landmark that he did as well, and I commend you so much with the work that you're doing, because indeed, so many of us, myself included, had been in the closet for years and years and years, and we've finally been able to have our coming out.
Well, exactly. You know, we looked towards writing such as Moody to give us some type of validation as to what was going on, and I found, as through my medical training, as I alluded to earlier, science really in the early 1970s and prior to that was arguing against spirituality. And what Moody did in showing, you know, these recurring elements time and time again through near death, whether it involved a Muslim, whether it involved one of the Jewish faith or Christians, you know, and it goes on and on, that these elements were recurring. And the central theme for probably, I think, the vast majority of these victims was the being of light and all the comfort and warmth and love which this being gave the victims during that time of need.
Oh, and I can certainly affirm that in every case. And even when I've had spiritually transformative experiences, I would feel this light. And I think as a result of being through near-death experiences, I'm always really aware of that essence, if you understand what I'm saying, of that light that is with me and with all of us. So go ahead, excuse me, and tell us a bit about your book. I mean, just the title of it draws me in so deeply, and I would really love to learn about how, you know, what prompted this? How did this come about? Now, let me back up just a little bit. Usually I ask my guests, have you had a near-death or similar spiritually transformative experience? Did you have this yourself, or is it just your observing patients?
No, I am not a near-death experiencer. In fact, I have always considered myself psychically deprived.
Oh, dear.
And, you know, it was that lack of any transformative event in my life, along with my scientific background, which really prevented me from accepting the concept of God based upon faith alone. I just was not someone who could do that. So that was where I was in the early 1970s. When 1975 rolled around and Moody came out with Life After Life, and I read that, I felt, okay, now here's a concept which lends credence for really the first time to what might be, you know, what might be going on the other side during these resuscitative events. But at the same time, I became interested in Albert Einstein with his, especially his special theory of relativity. And for those of you who are familiar with that, you recognize that light is, again, just like with near death, light is the cornerstone of the special theory of relativity. You know, you can look at E energy equals mc squared mass times the speed of light squared, and what you can see is not only is our mass and energy just transmutations of the same thing, but what you see is that probably one of the crucial concepts to Einstein's special theory of relativity is the fact that anything that can travel at light speed, time stops. Most people don't recognize the full impact of that single concept. What I try to tell my audiences when I give these talks is, if you can imagine a light wave at some point in the universe, and it begins its journey across the universe, say some thousands of years later, that light wave has now reached point B in the universe. Now, looking at that light wave as a human being, all those years elapse. We die, our children are born and raised, they die. I mean, immense periods of time elapse as that light wave travels through the universe. If you look, however, at that light wave, what you come to realize is that if you are the light wave, time does not elapse at all. Not a single second on a clock ticks away. So theoretically, if you expand that concept, you come to the realization that, and physicists have coined this, not myself, but physicists have actually acknowledged that, you know, theoretically that light wave is really everywhere in the universe at one time, and it's only our human perception that it appears to travel. And when you think about it, as humans, we live in three spatial dimensions and the fourth dimension of time. So we're locked within this four-dimensional landscape that we recognize as reality. However, light and our concepts of God are not locked within those four dimensions. They can exist in innumerable dimensions, and it's that ability of light and conceivably God certainly as well, enable these two entities to really have qualities that we just find impossible, you know, to recognize. Is the concept that theoretically light, theoretically God, can be everywhere in the universe at once, and yet it's only our human perception that light appears to travel.
And this is such a wonderful point that you're making here, because the countless times that I've tried to describe my experiences on the other side, I always say, there is no time, there is no space, it doesn't exist there. And yet, how to explain that, it's very, very hard to do.
You know, I hear that so often when people recite their near-death accounts. And you can take that concept one step further. Imagine that you're a light wave and you're everywhere in the universe. Obviously, you would know everything that's going on in the universe at that particular time. But time does not exist for the light wave, as I would argue, neither does it exist for God. So not only does that light wave know everything that's going on now in the universe, it could conceivably know everything that's ever occurred in the past and will ever occur in the future. And it's what I call the, I divide these different concepts into what I call the three omnis. The first omni was omnipresence, the ability of light to be everywhere. And the second omni that I've just described, the ability of the light to also be all-knowing, which, as you are aware, is another element in Moody's near-death experiencers, is the quality of omniscience. Again, also imparted by the light, but you as a near-death experiencer would know, as soon as you come back to the body, all that knowledge is lost.
Yes, and I do remember experiencing a bit of these omnis that you're talking about, and I love that word, omniscience, omnipresence, and omnipotence.
Right, omnipotence is the third. It's a little more difficult to describe this omni of light, you know, I think most people can understand the concept that, you know, if you're talking about an entity that's everywhere, and if you're talking about an entity which is all-knowing, probably it doesn't take a great giant step to expand that to the fact, you know, this is probably all-powerful as well. Now, from the physics standpoint, it's a little trickier. There is, however, a physics principle by the name of renormalization. It's the word normal with R-E in front and ization at the end, renormalization. For interested listeners, I would recommend you either get on the internet and do a search for renormalization, or if you have some advanced physics texts lying around, you can look it up in that. But renormalization actually is one physics principle which lends support to the fact that light really has an infinite energy level. What happened was in the early 1900s, physicists were trying to calculate energy levels of electrons and simple hydrogen atoms, and their values kept coming up showing infinite levels of energy. And obviously we know that is likely to be impossible. What it turns out is that light has such an intimate relationship with the electron, and we know electrons are involved with every atom, so you can't escape the contribution that light was lending to the electron, and hence all the energy levels they were coming up with were infinite. So it's just another interesting tale, that being the third omni of omnipotence, which again are all qualities that we characterize our concept of God. And they are all physical qualities that we also identify with physical light. So I do not think that these similarities are just metaphors as we read about in the Bible. I think there's more to it than that.
I would definitely think so myself. And again, this presence that I feel with the light, and I felt it so much as a child, too. Of course, I was really ill a lot as a child, and I had a number of NDEs. And I would talk to the light all the time, you know, as my invisible friend. And I was aware of electricity and electrons, and I was more fascinated with that sort of thing than, you know, I would never touch dolls or those sorts of things. I was always probing light and electricity and space, and actually having a sense of my being not really being human. That's just the facade, the front that I'm putting on for right now.
Right.
But that's not who I really am. And I experienced such great validation every time I was on the other side, and I thought, oh my goodness, I'm not crazy after all. And then talking to people like yourself and doing the research that I've done, every little bit has just been such a tremendous validation and source of comfort, because again, so many of us have been in the closet for a number of years. It was 25 years before I came out.
I understand. Well, you know, when I read about your NDE, I was just overwhelmed by your description of when you were talking about being enveloped by the light.
Yeah.
How you felt that was, I'm trying to think how you described it, but it was a feeling of pure consciousness, I think you described it.
Yes.
And I just thought that particular descriptive term that you use just fit in so well with what my research has shown as well.
And I think it's really significant, too, that you, as one, bless you, I really like the fact that you were a good, healthy skeptic, because you and Ernest were a seeker. And these truths just started coming to you because you really were wanting that truth. And then all of a sudden, you get this amazing information coming your way.
I'm a definite believer that I think it's one of the passages in the Bible describes that those who are seeking answers will find them.
Oh, yes.
And I do not doubt that one minute. I know, I personally think that what I call my my psychic, being psychically deprived, I really feel that God has made that a part of my life so that I could do this research for other skeptics, you know, similar to how I was in the early 1970s, so that they also can look at the fact that it's science that supports spirituality and not just a faith in God alone, which, you know, I'm not belittling that at all. My mother believes in God based upon faith alone, as does also my wife. However, I think so many people who are so powerfully swayed by science need that other side, that other argument for the existence of a higher being with a scientific basis as opposed to just faith alone.
Well, I think that's doing a tremendous service to the world, because indeed there's nothing wrong with faith, but as one who is truly spiritual, I also feel that we need more than faith, and that's why experience, and I put that in italics and exclamation points, is so vitally important, because we do need validation. We need to be able to move beyond faith and be able to come forth and say, this is real. This is being proven. It is certain. And that's why so many of us, because we are experiencers, can come forth and say, this is real. And the reason it's real is because I've been there. And again, when I was on the other side, that was the reason I was told I had to come back.
And I couldn't agree with you more. I think each time I read a new near-death experience, it's like I'm reading it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Each one has, you know, just a few variations, a few differences, and everyone has a sense of showing you just a little bit more truth than perhaps you had from the last one. And I just find each one just as refreshing as if I was had never seen a near-death validation before. I just find them amazing. And it fits in so well with the research I've done, because it seems really to be a validation of, like, the three omnis, the fact that when people are on the other side, time does not seem to exist. The light is associated with this vast knowledge, which is then lost when the near-death experiencer returns to the body. I really think that it's more than just metaphors like we read about in the Bible. I really think that there's an intimate relationship between God, the spirit world, and light.
Oh, I absolutely feel the same way. And in fact, I'm going to be so bold as to say, that's true. According to my experiences, it is absolutely true. And I'm just so excited to speak with you, because so many times, just as I'm in meditation or working on something creative or taking a walk, and even tonight as I was taking a walk and looking at the sunset, I just was in awe, because I think of light. And I'm so in love with light. I've got a love affair with the light.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because I certainly have developed one through a totally different path, you know, from your own. But
yes.
It's funny how we're all ending up at the same place.
And that's what's so exciting. That is what is so exciting, is that the light has got a way of reaching all of us, no matter what our backgrounds are, no matter how we think about things or view things or experience things. And even like the trilogies of like Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
My daughter saw the films. I didn't, but I read books many years ago. In fact, I think in the 60s, early 70s. And it just kept reminding me, it's a beautiful metaphor to remind us once again that the light is always going to triumph, no matter what. And that's what was being shown to me and reassured to me during my NDE in the mid-70s, even as the life was asking me to help, you know. And then I realized this is a part of what it is to co-create with the light.
Yes.
And then when I was feeling nervous about the fact that I might fall short or I might not be able to do everything as needed or to perfection or what have you, and then I was reassured that everything would be taken care of regardless. So there again is that omnipotence of the light, but also a reminder that we are all a part of that light, and we can never be separated, ever, from the light. And no matter where I was, I felt that light enveloping me. I could see it. I could feel it. I could feel that love. It didn't matter where I was or what I was going through. And it is only on this side that we have the appearance of being separate from the light. But we truly are not separate. And so I think that as you and people like you are doing this tremendous research and being able to come up with this validation that this is real, that the light is real, and that time and space do not exist, there are tremendous scientific evidence and proof of all of this now coming out all over the place. I've also got a friend, Dr. Claude Swanson, who wrote Synchronized Universe, who also, he's a physicist, and he's also proving and validating these experiences, and he's talking about light. And I just find this so tremendously rewarding and comforting. It's a great source of comfort because there are so many people that are still afraid to come out and talk about it.
I certainly agree. I know myself, to read the words of Nobel Prize winners saying, to give an example, Niels Bohr, the great physicist and scientist who won the Nobel Prize and who our model of the atom we learned about in grade school, he makes comments about those who are not shocked when they first come across quantum physics could not possibly have understood it. I like to use that quote because, you know, the first time you come across some of these concepts, as we've discussed with the three omnis, those are concepts that are difficult to swallow the first time you come across them. And when you see that you've got some of the greatest minds in the world who are also going through their emotions the first time that they come across them, helps identify that, you know, you're not alone with your confusion, because even some of the greatest minds have made the same comment. We have Richard Feynman, again, another Nobel Prize winner, saying that what he has witnessed in some of the experiments that he's run with light, he describes them as just impossible, absolutely impossible. So it's really a wild world we live in currently, and as I mentioned before, I think it's just so wonderful and amazing that science and people of faith and people like yourself who undergo some of these wonderful experiences like the near death, we're all ending up at the same place. And it's just a great feeling that I think so much of the world is recognizing that and coming together.
Well, this is something that I am going to keep you know, now I'm at a point where I'm ready to set off the rooftops, as it were, and doing this radio show is a way to do that, because it is so important to get the world out there that God is light. And it was just so obvious to me. And just saying God is light and light is love, my whole being resonates with that as deep truth. And also, when on the other side, I didn't see this he God sitting on a throne. Unfortunately, human beings have created God in the image and likeness of man rather than the other way around.
Yes, yes.
And so I would really like to have more details, especially in scientific terms, because I just get all tongue-tied when I try to describe this, even though I know it from every marrow of my being. It is still very hard to describe that. And perhaps you could get into more descriptions of, you know, the how God is like, what that looks like. And I do remember once reading, I believe it was in the beginning of the book, The Seed of the Soul by Gary Zukav, he was talking about how light is absolutely consistent and can't be altered. And he was describing light that is like nothing else that exists.
Well, I love Gary Zukav. He's an excellent writer and author. And the quality you mentioned, the consistency, the constancy of light, I know I like to tell my audiences that with all the type of scientific data, the physics formulas that we were forced to memorize in school, what we know and what Einstein helped to show us is that some of the qualities like space, qualities like time that we always on a day-to-day basis feel are so unchangeable, that is not at all the case. That time and space, Einstein showed, are really variables, and they can be altered quite easily, especially as the centuries roll on and we find ourselves undoubtedly in deep space travel. We're going to have to incorporate those type of changes of space and time into that type of travel. What we end up finding is that really light is probably one of the few constants that we can hang our hats on in the universe. And again, it would go back to the fact that it is so intimately related to our concept of God. I think it is, we've all learned when we studied the Bible, and Muslims when they study the Quran, the Hindus when they study the Bhagavad Gita and one of their other sacred texts known as the Veda. And it goes on and on. I could just go through and name every major religion across the face of the earth, and we see that they describe their God in terms of light. We've always been taught growing up and in Bible studies and in Bible school that those are all always metaphors, and that the author was just comparing the goodness and the high, you know, quality of how we conceptualize God to light, and that Satan represents darkness and whatnot, and that it's all metaphors. But when you look at science, and when you look at the special theory of relativity, how light is the cornerstone of really the new physics, and how light is the major transforming element of the near-death experience and actually a few other paranormal experiences, I think there's probably more to it than just metaphors. And I know I bring up the question in my books as to whether, you know, should we be so bold as to say that God and light are exactly the same? Well, probably not, but there is certainly an intimate relationship between the two. I'm not so egocentric that I think I have all the answers. At least I hope I'm not. But my research would certainly show that there is a very intimate relationship, and science seems to be proving that that relationship, we're able to show that evidence in scientific experiments. So I just think it's just from, considering myself a man of science, I just think it's wonderful. I really think science and medicine and physics is really making leaps and bounds to support spirituality. And I never thought I'd be saying that when I was back in the early 1970s as such a scientific and spiritual skeptic for any type of those type of events. So it's a wonderful transition. I'm proud to be part of it, and like yourself, I think your website and this radio show, I think what you're doing is just wonderful. People like Kevin Williams as well, who runs NearDeath.com.
Yes, and I wanted to make mention of him too, and thank you, Lee, for this, because he's just amazing.
Isn't he something, the work you put into his website?
And let's tell the listeners about this. The website is NearDeath.com, and that's N-E-A-R. -death.com, and it is so chock full of resources and information, and you'll find Dr. P. Lee Bauman under scientific evidence for NDEs. I believe that's the category, and then I'm under notable NDEs. Let me see, I've got the website right here. Scientific evidence of survival. That's the category where you've got a large profile on you in here on NearDeath.com. And we've got a wonderful friend, PMH Atwater, tremendous amount of resources on this website. Again, it is near-death.com. And then, Lee, you are, NearDeath.com. /physics.
Right. It's nearDeath.com/physics.html.
.html. Okay.
And that'll get you to the website which Kevin Williams has been kind enough to place on my research.
It's tremendous, and he does this as a labor of love, too. And I can't think of anybody who's done more for NDEs than Kevin Williams, really, with this site. It is absolutely wonderful. You have got a presence on another website, correct?
I do. My own website is www.writers, that's writers with a W-W-R-I-T-E-R-S, .net. And really, I encourage most people just to go to writers.net, and at the top of the page, there's a fill-in-the-blank search engine, and it just type in Bauman is probably the easiest, and it'll put you right through to my personal website with my research.
And that is B as in brother, A-U-M-A-N-N, correct?
Exactly, yes.
Okay. Well, that would be really good, because I would love people to be able to get hold of your book, and you've written a few books.
I've been very fortunate in being able to get some of my thoughts published. So.
And what are, tell us the titles of the other books that you've written, and also where we can get hold of them.
I'd be happy to, and thank you for asking. My first book is God at the Speed of Light. It was published in 2002, and all of my books are published by ARE Press. They can all be found at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, BooksAMillion.com, probably any of the .com booksellers have it. My second book is Window to God, And in this book, I actually go off on a different direction. The ARE is actually a foundation founded by the great American psychic, Edgar Cayce. Now, I'll have to admit, I'm still somewhat shocked at the fact that my first book never mentions Edgar Cayce, and yet they still published my first book. So that's a miracle in itself, but I am very grateful to the ARE for it. And as you can imagine, it was impossible for me to go around the country talking about my research in God at the speed of light without eventually finding out who this Edgar Cayce person was. So I did, and for those of you who don't know who Edgar Cayce is, he was a psychic who died in 1945. He found he could fall into a trance and make medical diagnoses for patients who could be thousands of miles away. And when I read about him, I realized that no scientist, no medical doctor, MD specifically, had ever researched his medical readings from a medical and scientific perspective. So I thought, who better than myself as a medical doctor to do that? So I went off for probably a 12-month period of time, and I researched his trances, which have all been documented in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and are also accessible over the Internet. I actually researched his medical readings for medical and scientific validity and credibility. Well, what I found was that his readings for how medicine was practiced back in the early 20th century were more than medically acceptable. He had probably a 90% plus satisfaction rate from patients. Even in today's modern medical world, 85% is felt to be, you know, miraculous. So his satisfaction rate was just uncanny, to put it mildly. So that's what my second book is about.
I look forward to reading that, too, because I've always admired him, and being a psychic myself, I really have given much credence to the work that he's done, and I actually spoke there in Virginia Beach at the ARE Center in December of 2003. I was talking about my near-death experience that I had in the mid-70s, and it's just really quite magical.
It's a great organization, and they do host a lot of medical, and when I say medical, I'm talking about the whole field, really, the holopathic, allopathic, holistic, you know, it goes on. They cover the spectrum, which, having become an Edgar Cayce convert myself, I feel is really the way to go currently, because you can't overlook any type of medical regime which has any type of validity at all. So it's a wonderful organization. I then went back to my God at the Speed of Light roots for my third book, which really just came out within the past week, and it goes by the name of Akashic Light, which is a Indian Sanskrit term spelled A-K-A-S-H-I-C, the Akashic Light. And what I do in this book is I basically decided to do a detailed review of how every major religion in the world describes its primary god for those religions that had more than one god. And as I mentioned earlier, they all describe him or her in terms of light. And I look at the ancient religions such as Incas, Mayans, Egyptians. I look at all of today's modern religions. I even look at some of the tribal religions of Africa and Native American religions here in the Americas, and I was just overwhelmed with the fact that each of these varied religions had some type of light comparison or light worship. Now, certainly the Egyptians, their form of light worship was the sun god Ra, and a lot of these other ancient religions had, you know, very comparable gods. And I go into why I think it was that they perhaps weren't worshiping light directly, but were worshiping the sun. And I think it's an easy misconception to make for these primitive cultures and religions. But I was really overwhelmed with the fact that every major religion compares its god in terms of light. So that's what that book is about. And I go into, again, I go back to quantum physics to explain how it is that all these different religions could view their god just a little differently, but with always one common denominator, and that common denominator, of course, is light. So it, I really enjoyed writing that third book, and I learned an awful lot from the research I did on it.
Now, do either of these books, where you are talking about God at the speed of light and the Akashic light, does it contain graphs or illustrations or photographs or anything like that?
God at the Speed of Light has several illustrations and diagrams. Window to God, I think, may have one, possibly two, that I'm recollecting immediately. And Akashic Light has, I think, two very simple diagrams, which what I found, and you can probably appreciate this, you know, the third time of writing a book, you find that your narrative skills and your descriptive skills are perhaps more mature at this point. So I really found that it was easier to write some of these complex concepts the third time around, and I didn't feel that I needed some of the diagrams that I had to utilize in my first book. So yes and no.
I do find them very helpful, very useful too, of course, being mostly right-brained. And also, again, trying to convey this information, because I feel that words fall so far short of really being able to clearly transmit or convey this information to people.
Well, they do, and certainly I think I go into some of the more really difficult physics concepts more so in God at the Speed of Light. And with that book, I really, you know, the book, the diagrams are really essential for that book. I tried to keep the concepts a little more maneuverable and perhaps more on the simple side for Akashic Light, because I didn't want people to get overwhelmed with some of these difficult concepts, and I felt if people were interested in those, they could always go back to God at the Speed of Light to reference those type of qualities in light.
Well, that is so tremendous, because this is information that people all over the place will be able to use, and it's definitely helping people like me to be able to explain this better, because people still regard us experiences as being subjective.
I understand that to some degree, but after you read the 200th or 300th NDE experience,
exactly.
you know, and you keep reading the same thing, and it doesn't matter if the patient was drugged, you know, because of the drugs necessary for advanced cardiac life support,
yes,
or because of drugs that they were receiving, perhaps like yourself, due to cancer or other pain-causing illnesses, or whether they had absolutely no drugs at all and just received perhaps some basic CPR, you know, at the roadside and immediately recovered. I think it's impossible to dismiss the fact that such consistent elements, as Moody pointed out, you know, and the recurring facts of these near-death experiences, you reach a point where you cannot continue to refute the importance of those elements.
And hearing these words coming from a doctor like yourself just is making my heart sing, because, again, there's been countless times when, I mean, even still now, and I'm not far from you geographically. I'm in Nashville, Tennessee,
yes.
USA. And you probably understand the territory that we're dealing with, too, with all these fundamentalists and all of that. Even with the scientific community coming forward and saying this is real, even with people like myself coming forward and saying this is real, I've been there. And there's still such a prevailing, don't bother me with the facts, my mind is already made up based on what I've been told.
Exactly.
So we really do have our work cut out for us, but one thing that I can really say is that having this love affair with the light has also enabled me to be more full of trust and more certain that it's okay. In the light time, all of this is going to get through, and everyone will ultimately get this message, and they will know that God is light, that God is love. It's not just a sweet nursery rhyme or poem or song. It is real. And being on the other side, it is so apparent. It's beyond theory. It's beyond faith. It is something that just permeates every spasm of my being. Just this love, this light is everywhere, and it is so powerful and so gentle at the same time, and that's what's interesting about it. And I also noticed that the light has really quite got a sense of humor.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I found the light being very playful at times and teasing me, and it almost seemed flirtatious at times. And then other times it would be very serious, and it was really tremendous to have this experience. And you know, we don't have to be so formal or solemn when we're thinking of this divine source. You know what I'm saying? We can play with it, we can have fun, we can celebrate with it, experience joy with it, because the light does translate to joy to me.
It makes you wonder if those aren't some of the qualities that endowed some of the biblical passages saying that man and woman were made in God's image. You know, some of those humoristic, perhaps, qualities that you just described.
And actually, when we're not in our bodies, we can see the light that we really are. And that's the other part about being on the other side, is experiencing this light in ourselves as light. And actually, this human aspect of us is just a hologram. Well, at least that's been my conclusion anyway. And
I agree.
A number of other people. Well, Lee, it has been so wonderful having you with us, and it is time to bid adieu to you and to our listeners for this week. It is a tremendous pleasure having you with us. Do you want to quickly provide any more contact information so people can reach you?
Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you so much for having me on. And yes, anyone who would like to send me a question or any type of message via email, please do so at tbauman, B-A-U-M-A-N-N, two N's at the end, the number one, at yahoo.com. And that's tbauman1 at yahoo.com. So I would please encourage any listener to feel free to email me.
And I will also put your books up on my website on the books page, because I am just so excited to read them myself. And thank you again for being with us. It has been tremendously wonderful. We'll have to have you back, because this is something, a dialogue that could go on for hours.
Yeah, it really could. Thank you so much, Juliet. It's been a pleasure.
And likewise, my friend. Well, blessings to you. And thank you, everyone, for joining us this week. And I look forward to having you join us next week. And do, again, visit my website, towardthelight.org. And, again, wonderful to have you with us this week. And please remember that only love prevails. Blessings and light.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.